From the KTO newsroom, I'm Jamie Deep. The Alaska State Board of Education unanimously approved a new master's in teaching program for Indigenous languages at the University of Alaska Southeast Thursday. This is the final approval the program needs to begin accepting students. Angela Lunda is the campus's interim dean of education. She says this program would strengthen the teacher workforce for Indigenous languages, which are also official languages of Alaska.
It really does contribute to the long-term viability of Indigenous languages across the state, which, according to my research that I have done, is really closely tied with cultural identity development, and that is tied to well-being.
Lunda says the program is years in the making and is designed for fluent speakers of Alaska's Indigenous languages. It would create a pathway for people who currently teach an Indigenous language at schools to become fully certified. She says the state currently has more than 120 language teachers who have a limited teaching license. Those only allow teachers to work in one school district, and Lunda says some receive different pay and benefits because of it. Chancellor Aparna Palmer was the sole testifier during the meeting and spoke in support of the program.
It serves the needs of Alaska in helping preserve its Indigenous languages and grow their speakers. Languages have the power to communicate, but also hold the traditions and cultures of the Native peoples of the great state of Alaska.
Board member Pamela Dupras supported the program and says it would strengthen the state's ability to provide culturally responsive education. She says she has a vested interest because she is Ununga.
I really want to see that other languages are being successful, and at the same time I'm hoping that people from my community will take advantage and promote our language as well.
A spokesperson for the university said in an email the program will begin this fall. She said UAS predicts the first cohort will have 6 students, but the campus still needs to begin accepting applications. Residents will have a chance to testify on some major budget topics and glacial outburst flood funding decisions at the Juneau Assembly's upcoming meeting on Monday night. KTOO's Clarice Larson breaks down what to expect.
The Juneau Assembly is slated to tackle a marathon of critical financial decisions on Monday night. The topics on the agenda include deciding on significant components of the city's proposed budget for the next fiscal year and potential changes in how the city pays for glacial outburst flood mitigation. Monday night's meeting is the final chance for residents to testify on the city's budget for next year before the June 15 deadline to finalize it. The meeting is a culmination of months of back and forth, while the Assembly found a way to plug a multi-million dollar recurring budget hole due to the tax exemption on food and utilities and the cap on the city's property tax rate that voters passed last fall. Those ballot initiatives created a roughly $10 to $12 million annual deficit going forward. The Assembly will decide on Monday night whether to finalize its proposed service cuts for next fiscal year or potentially change course at the 11th hour. A key factor is whether the Assembly votes to raise the city's sales tax cap on single-item goods from $15,000 to $30,000, or potentially eliminate it entirely, which would bring in more revenue. They're also considering several other tax changes that could yield more revenue as well. If the Assembly votes to move forward with those ways to increase revenue, it may choose to reverse some of the proposed service cuts, like reducing funding to the Juneau Douglas City Museum and grantees, and closing the Mount Jumbo Gym. Some Assembly members are already seeking to add back funding to the City Museum on Monday night. At the meeting, the Assembly will also finalize the property tax rate, also known as the mill rate, for next year. It's currently proposed to be 9.92 mils. That 0.92 is for debt service. The rate abides by the new property tax rate voters approved last election of 9 mils, excluding debt service, and it's lower than last year's rate. Separate from the budget, the Assembly will also vote on an ordinance that would undo a controversial funding decision that helped pay for the initial stretch of the Mendenhall River flood wall. The city passed a funding scheme called a Local Improvement District, or LID, last year to split the original cost of building the HESCO barriers by a 60 to 40 ratio with around 400 landowners in the Mendenhall Valley flood zone. Most households would have to pay $6,300. But after the wall flood sustained damage during the most recent glacial outburst flood in August, city staff said the LID isn't made to care for ongoing costs, which have ballooned. Repairing and raising the wall this year alone will cost an estimated $14.8 million, and it's expected to cost tens of millions of dollars more over the next several years that it will remain in place. Doing away with the lid would resolve issues of fairness, since many landowners who aren't required to pay were likely protected from the record-breaking flood last year. It could also quash a lawsuit brought on by two riverfront property owners hosting the barriers, who took issue with paying to lose some of their land. Juneau residents have the chance to testify on ordinances on Monday's agenda, as well as other non-agenda items, in person or online before the assembly votes. People who want to testify online must notify the city clerk by 4 p.m. before the meeting. The meeting begins at 6 p.m. at City Hall. With help from Alex Solomon, I'm Clarice Larson in Juneau.
An unusual partnership is sailing Alaska's waters this summer. A cruise line is teaming up with an international whale advocacy organization to host a marine mammal observer on board for part of the season. Last month, KTOL's Alex Solomon boarded the ship during its mating call to Juneau and has this story.
A couple thousand passengers disembark the MSC Poesia in downtown Juneau on a sunny afternoon. Still on board is Steve Jones. He's the chief operating officer at Orca, a citizen science nonprofit based in the United Kingdom that advocates for whales and dolphins around the globe. And he's here to kick off a collaboration to study how ships can avoid hitting whales.
We still don't understand some really fundamental questions. What action should the ship take? What species-specific guidance might there be?
Later this summer, the MSC Poesia will host a marine mammal observer for 5 weeks as it sails from Seattle through Southeast Alaska's Inside Passage in an effort to help answer those questions. The observer, named Maria Snell, will see humpback whales as they spend the summer fattening up on herring and krill while raising their young. Snell will track whales using a video camera and binoculars stationed on the ship's bridge. She'll alert the crew when she sees whales and collect data on behavior and proximity to the ship. In addition, she plans to train the crew on whale avoidance and talk to passengers about conservation. Jon Olav Stedja is the manager of sustainability and community engagement for MSC Cruises, an international cruise line headquartered in Geneva, Switzerland. He says the company is collaborating with Orca to honor Alaska's waters.
We enter Alaska market for the first time, and we want to make sure that we do that in a proper and respectful way.
In Alaska, it's illegal for vessels to get within 100 yards of humpback whales, speed near them, block their path, or disrupt their behavior. But it's still common for ships to hit whales, causing severe and sometimes fatal injuries. Between 2020 and 2024, there were 9 reported vessel strike incidents in the Juneau area. 6 involved calves. According to the International Whaling Commission, collisions with large vessels often go unnoticed or unreported. Jones says it's important to keep watch and collect more information to protect whales from ships.
The classic baseline is always if you see a blow, go slow. So the second you become aware, you try and slow down as much as possible.
But he says crews can do more than that.
You can if you're aware far enough in advance and going at a slow enough speed with the right sort of propulsion, maneuver around a whale.
Some local research backs this up. During the summers of 2016 and 2017, a marine mammal observer watched whales aboard 67 large cruise ships as they passed through the waters of Glacier Bay National Park. Scientists combined the observer's data on humpback whales rising to the surface with simulated ship responses and found that it is possible for big ships to actively avoid hitting whales. The scientists estimated that crews have, on average, 3 chances to see a whale surfacing as the ship approaches, but they have to be looking. Heidi Pearson is a professor of marine biology at the University of Alaska Southeast, who studies humpback whale health in Juneau. She says she isn't familiar with Orca's work, but supports ships taking on marine mammal observers.
You know, I think if more vessels had dedicated marine mammal observers aboard, potentially they could help to avoid more whale strikes. So I don't see any downside to that.
But she says it will probably be difficult to collect rigorous scientific data on how whales respond to the vessel.
That's hard to get without like a baseline or control or, you know, really dedicated behavioral studies.
Orca hasn't published any peer-reviewed scientific papers, but Jones says the organization makes its citizen science data freely available. He says Orca has submitted data to Happy Whale, an organization that identifies individual whales from photos, and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
You're listening to Tongass Voices, perspectives from the homelands of the Occoquan and beyond. Every celebration, a dance group is asked to lead. That means they write a song that all groups dance into during grand entrance and out of during grand exit, the dance ceremonies that bookend celebration. Although this year's lead dance group has deep roots in Southeast Alaska, it was formed in 2005 in Anchorage by leader Shugat Limi Marcella Asiksik. The group performs songs in Somaliuk, the Tsimshian language.
I'm Shugart Limi. I'm the dance group leader for Lepkenam Gamok Gogodom Tsimshian Dancers in Nigyok, Alaska, Anchorage, Alaska. I'm Tsimshian. My mom is Tsimshian and Yupik. My dad's Tsimshian and Haida. And so I was missing dancing and didn't see Tsimshian representation in Anchorage. And so I called what Tsimshian peoples I knew in the area, found a location for us to meet, and we formed into a group. But we're mixed. Tlingit, Haida, Tsimshian, Diné, Yupik, Inupiaq. It's a really big honor to be selected. We've been working really hard fundraising to get to celebration. We had the honor of creating a new song in Shimaugik for grand entry and grand exit that we're gifting to all the dance group who participated this year. So it was an honor to put that together and just represent the Tsimshian people in general. We saw that the theme this year was nurturing strength, and so I have this big dry erase board. And I was like, okay, where do we find our strengths? And so we wrote everybody's ideas on the dry eraser board. And I work with a Shimaugik speaker from Kitsum Kalem, Shagalita. And I told him, you know, the list that we made and asked for his help in translating it to Shimaugik. And that got us the three verses for the song. The first verse is, the reason for my joy is my blessing. The second verse is, I find my strength where I live from my clan. The third verse, I find my strength where I live from the land and in all our different traditional foods, and I keep going.
That was dance group leader Shugat Limi Marcella Asiksik talking about the song her group wrote for celebration. This is KTOO.